This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil premieres April 30th, only on Hulu.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hi, Geekscapists. Welcome to a brand new Geekscape podcast. I'm Jonathan London, your host. And if this is your first Geekscape, strap yourselves in for some pop culture talk. If this isn't your first Geekscape, you know the drill. We're going to be talking pop culture. This episode is a previously recorded live panel from Los Angeles Comic Con, the last one that I'm going to put on the feed. This will be the last podcast of 2023 before we have brand new live episodes in 2024. But we're ending on a great one. This is our Creating Indie Comics panel from Los Angeles Comic Con. It featured some great Geekscape friends, previous Geekscape guests from way back, Jason Inman and Ashley Victoria Robinson. They joined me on the panel to talk about their experiences, kickstarting and starting up some comics. I also had recent Geekscape guest, Peihuan Xiao, from Immortal Studios on. You guys remember him from like a month ago on the feed, talking about his experiences starting up his Immortal Studios comic book company. And Tony Fleece, you remember him from this past summer and back in the spring, the writer, creator, and artist of Local Man and Stray Dogs. He joined on the panel to give his expertise, and he brought along a friend, Dennis Culver, somebody who I really, really love. His work has been on an indie book called Burnouts. He did a book called Crone for Dark Horse, and he's done some work for DC. He did a Doom Patrol book. The man has cred, and he joined us on this panel. This is an awesome panel. I, of course, started it because I'm thinking about maybe starting up some indie comics. How would I go about it? Yep, I selfishly used my own podcast and panel to do my own research with my friends. Why not? I'm going to use the resources that are at my disposal, wouldn't you? That's why we built this freaking thing. Wouldn't it be awesome if I brought you some brand new comics that were born like right here in Geekscape? And you were like, whoa, that's really cool. They took characters from Geekscape and they put them in comics. We'll get to that. That being said, this panel is all about how you go about it. We talk a little bit about the state of the industry. We talk about crowdfunding. We talk about personal experiences of creating their own comics and why these creators created their own comics. And then we take some questions from the audience. All right. That's what you have in store. Let's not delay. Geekscape forever. Let's get to it. Enjoy.
Hi, everybody. My name is Jonathan London. I'm the host of Geekscape. It's a podcast I started 18 years ago so that I could do exactly what I'm doing now, which is talk to creatives about movies, video games, comic books. We had our screenwriting panel earlier today in this room, but now we're back with the first love of my life, which is comic books. No, you're right next to the first love of my life, Jason Inman.
I understand.
Your husband. Watch it, girl. Watch your back. really, what I've been doing, in Jason, you and I, we go out and we talk about indie comics and financing indie comics and putting them together because, really, you and Ashley have had success with this. I think everybody on their panel has had success with putting together indie comics. And I'm sure those of you who are sitting in the room right now watching this panel have interest in maybe maybe starting your first indie comics, or maybe if you've ventured into indie comics and crowdfunding them or finding some way to put them together yourself, maybe you're like, how can I fine tune that? Is there a better way to do it? What am I doing that I can do better? That is really the selfish reason that I put this panel together, because I love picking these creators' brains. And my podcast, Geekscape, has allowed me to be in kind of their vicinity where I can meet somebody like Ashley, Jason, Tony. We've got Dennis, who I'm meeting now for the first time, and Pei Huan, and really pick their brains about their lives as creators and share them with you guys, but really just help them provide me with guidance, kind of find a way for me to get guidance from them. So why don't we go down the panel and introduce yourself, not just as a creator, but like how you got into independent comic books. And we'll start with you, Ashley, because you and Jason were kind of the ones who told me, like, oh, cool, they're doing it, they're my friends.
Are we friends? Oh, we're enemies.
I'm friends with Jason.
Hi, my name is Ashley Victoria Robinson. I got into comics because Jason said that I should try writing comics, because the real answer is because when I grew up, I read mostly French language comics. I'm from Canada originally, and as long as we were quiet and not killing each other, my parents were fine with what we were doing. So Tintin, Bombard, and stuff like that were my gateway into comics. And then it wasn't really something I understood that you could do as a real people job until I was a grown up. And Top Cow was doing the Top Cow Talent Hunt, and I was one of the winners in 2013, and so I started my comics with them. I wrote a backup in Witchblade 175, and then shockingly, the world didn't open up and offer me more comics writing work. I was like, oh, comics for fun and profit? And that was like one of the only times I've ever been paid to write comics. So since then, Kickstarter became a huge thing, and Jason and I started taking comics to Kickstarter and finding success there, and that has been my big in into comics. It's all been crowdfunding and original comics.
I mean, my first in into comic books was actually The Death of Superman. That was the first time where I looked at a story and I saw names on a page and I said, oh wow, people can be professionals and make comic books. And my name is Jason Inman. I don't know if I said that, so but enough people have said it on this panel already. But I kind of went through the traditional route for a while, like a bunch of people trying to pitch publishers and do kind of things, and, you know, didn't see much movement there because, of course, you know, I had no resume to my name. And I just took it to Kickstarter just to say kind of, F it. And it worked. And that's kind of where I've seen the most success and the more thing. And to me, it also brings like a lot of fun to it because you can kind of do what you want. And there's a market for, as another gentleman, lovely gentleman on this panel will explain, there's kind of a market for anything on Kickstarter, which is very interesting about it. But that's how I found my way into independent comic books.
I also want to add that because you mentioned The Death of Superman, on Jason's latest Kickstarter, he had a Dan Jurgens variant cover. So you can, through the power of independent comics, work with the people who inspired you to get into comics. So don't let the fact that you're doing it on your own seem like it's not an incredible opportunity.
Hell yeah, Dan Jurgens.
Hell yeah, Dan Jurgens.
S-O-D-J. I'm Tony Fleece. I make a bunch of different comics currently. I have a book from Image Comics called Local Man, but I also did an Image comic book called Stray Dogs. I got into independent comics and comics at the same time. I wrote and drew an autobiographical comic when I was like 23 years old, and it was in black and white, and it was at a time in comics when there was sort of like a mini autobio comics boom going on. And I found somebody to publish it for me, and I sort of like at that point was just like, oh, I am in comics now. And I quit my real job, and I just, after selling like 700 comics through the direct market, was like, I guess I have a career. So I quit my job and just went to go make my way. But I've done every kind of comics or indie comics. I've done work for hire, writing and drawing. I've Kickstarted books. I've self-funded Image books. So I've done all the different shapes of indie comics.
I also want to give a mad shout out because I mentioned this to him before the panel. But Local Man, if you haven't read it, is really good. It's like one of the best comic books I've read this year.
So. And I say it many times on the podcast. And I've said it to Tony many times. It's my favorite book on stands right now.
Please.
I just love Local Man. And Tony, like like hanging out with you like inspires me to be like, okay, like this guy is doing it. And I don't know how I can inspire to do the twists and turns in the writing that you do. I think your writing's amazing. But I'm gonna freaking try. I'm gonna freaking try.
Thank you. Yeah. Well, I hope that you do.
What's the story of Local Man?
What's the story of Local Man? For the new people in the room that have not heard of it, which is many, it's a book from Image Comics, but it's about a guy that is a former Image Comics superhero. Like he would have been on like a Youngblood or a Wildcats or a Brigade or Bloodstrike, one of these type of, well, not Bloodstrike, he's not dead, but one of these 90s type of Image Comics teams, extremes type superheroes, big bombastic action, and now it's, you know, 30-ish years later, and he's sort of been fired and canceled and has to move home with his mom and dad in the Midwest. And everybody in town hates him, and he's not allowed to be a superhero anymore, and people start getting murdered in the small town where he's from, and he has to figure out if there's a way that he can still, you know, help people without being a superhero, basically.
I want to pitch that to Nicolas Cage.
Let's do it. Do you know him? Can we get that going right now?
Let's do it. Let's do lunch.
On board. We're in.
And that's how you network.
How you network.
I'm Dennis Culver. I started making comics probably around the same time you did. We never talked about this, but I was putting autobio comics. Like I was in an attempt to learn my craft, to learn to draw, to learn to write, to learn to do the whole thing. I decided I'm just going to do a comic and a sketchbook every day of like something that happened in my day. It's like 3 or 4 panels. And then just to date it, I started putting it on LiveJournal. And so I was calling it my sketch journal. And then I had like some that were funny, you know, like some that people were responding to. And so I made a mini comic called Fun Wrecker. And I took it to the Alternative Press Expo, which they used to do in San Francisco. And I made like 100. I stole the copies from the place I was working for.
Yes.
Like, totally put the thing together. And I was selling them for like $1 a piece, and I made $100. It was amazing. So that kind of got like the bug in me. Like I'd always been drawing and always wanted to do comics, but like actually physically doing it, physically making the thing and handing it out to people. There's something very exciting and very fulfilling about doing that. And then from there, I started drawing comics. Also then eventually started writing comics. I did a book with Image called Burnouts, which is basically, there's an alien invasion that nobody can see except the worst kids in school, and they can only see it when they're stoned. So it's like Freaks and Geeks meets like John Carpenter's They Live. Yeah, exactly. And so from there, I did another indie book with Dark Horse called Crone, which is just like an old lady warrior woman. It's like Unforgiven, but it's a woman with a sword coming back for one last thing. And then I've written for DC Comics and Marvel and some of those guys too. But we're not talking about those.
No.
And Paywan, you have a similar background to me. You come from film and TV. Talk about your entrance and going into and starting Immortal Studios.
Sure. I'm actually celebrating 4 years today in the indie comic business. Woo! I actually started here 4 years ago. I came as a... I had a previous career as a creator and also as a movie producer and financier. I managed to get some of my films made, but the things that I really wanted to do was to birth this martial arts fantasy known as Wuxia Universe that was incredibly expensive, ambitious, daring, and I knew that to go the film route immediately would take like hundreds of millions of dollars, which I wasn't going to successfully raise. The offers that I got from the studios required me to sell all my IP, which I also did not want to do. So I said, all right, I'm just going to have to do it on my own. And I was really, the idea of being able to tell really expansive, ambitious, daring stories very quickly in semi-real time with no limitations to what we could do creatively was kind of the impetus to go into the comic world. Up until then, I was basically a casual fan. I had never dreamt that I would be in the comic book business. I actually brought our first comic book, which we managed to launch because of the relationships I forged in my first LA Comic Con. This is The Adept. We launched it and we successfully raised $35,000 from 1,205 people, which launched the Immortal Storyverse, which, according to my own lore, is competing with Marvel and DC for the next generation of superheroes, because I'm tired of superheroes. And I believe we have an original opportunity to really turn the page with things that are grounded. And so we're So when I think about the comic book business, what's most exciting for me first is has been the camaraderie, the friendships, the kind of fellowship and support you get from fellow creators. I come from Hollywood where it's pretty cutthroat. You know, you seldom leave a meeting with people say, hey, what can I do for you? How can I help you? How can I open up my Rolodex? That was like the first impression. And two is just the, we've been able to issue now multiple issues of our books. I think we've now successfully run 6 Kickstarter campaigns. We're in the process of launching our 10th book. We've gotten worldwide distribution through Dynamite to the direct market. And we're in the process of launching our own movie studio. All because of the work that we were able to do just by telling our stories with an original vision. So I'm really excited, and I'm coming back here actually to launch the next chapter of the Immortal Storyverse. And in fact, I just got one of our writers to Assassin G to write for the movie today. Huh.
And guys, if you're not following Immortal Studios on their socials, you actually have a town hall coming up later this week that is like an online town hall. You can come hang out with them, similar to like a Zoom type room.
Bring in all of our creators.
And find out what they're all about. Yeah, that kind of thing.
We actually just also partnered with the Shaolin Temple. Which, as if you're walking down Broadway, I'm really happy of this because
last night I was leaving a concert. I'm walking down Broadway and I saw the marquee has not changed from 2 weeks ago when they were doing this giant wushu martial arts event. It's still there. So I took a picture at like 11 o'clock at night and sent it to him. I was like, sorry for the late text, but your marquee's still out getting free advertising on Broadway.
No, we called it on that stage. We got the abbot of the head of the Shaolin Temple, where the legend of Kung Fu started, to be on our stage, sharing our characters and giving us the mandate to really launch the next generation of Kung Fu, which is kind of like unimaginably cool and amazing.
Yeah, but if you went to see Shang-Chi, or if we're talking about John Carpenter, if you've seen Big Trouble Little China, like that is all like Zoo Warriors inspired Shaolin Wushu stuff. I run Geekscape. I didn't have friends. I know all this weird knowledge.
You hear Shang-Chi, you hear a lot of other stuff, but Zoo Warriors, like that is such an original, important title.
My brother back there and I used to watch that stuff all the time. He became a pro wrestler and I became a person in the comics.
Wait, can we like, just evolve into like the, when like, like the Chinese invasion came over in terms of the Hollywood film industry. Can we talk about how Sammo Hung doesn't get enough credit and how he's the
best? Sammo Hung does not get enough credit.
And how he's the best of that whole group.
Well, I don't know if I've heard the word Chinese invasion before. So, I mean,
they taught us that.
Explain yourself.
So when I was in,
I may be part of that, but I don't know.
When I was in theater school, they referred to like the bringing over in like the sort of 50s through 70s of
you're
like
talking like when John Woo came with Chow Yun Fat.
She's talking 50s, 70s, the things that laid the groundwork for Bruce Lee to be able to come over, the Shaw Brothers movies to be able to come over and be fourth-walled alongside the other exploitation films.
That was 70s. That would be the Wuxia films of the 70s. But I think really when they landed, because I've been part of that wave, so to speak, was when John Woo and Chow Yun Fat came over. Mm-hmm.
So in the 90s. We're talking 90s there.
But the 70s, well, Bruce Lee was rejected by Hollywood. He had to go find his career in Hong Kong, and then they loved him because he was given the chance to do these things. But I think we're seeing a new age today of inclusion and representation, and now, you know, I'm really proud for my fellow Americans because I think people in North America are really supporting diverse voices now, where Asian American content, we're the only AAPI-led global storyverse where the majority of our fans are non-Asians. So 85% of our fans are just people like in this room. So that's extraordinary.
Well, let's talk about the idea of being rejected, just along the lines of being rejected by the norm, the Marvel, the DC. Tony, Jason, Ashley, Dennis, did you guys do the query letters? Did you guys try going to the big twos? Like, I'm guessing that when Fortune and Glory came out, when some of those autobiographical books in the early 2000s came out, you guys were like, okay, cool, I'm going to do a similar thing to what Bendis did with Fortune and Glory. I'm going to do an autobiographical book. But did you try alongside that to be like maybe pitch a spider Spider-Man story to Marvel, or to maybe meet one of the DC editors at a comic convention and see what they thought of your writing samples. Ashley, she did a Wildstorm contest for writers. Is there any point in doing that, or is this the place where you say, you know what? I'm going to get rejected by that stuff. I'm going to tell my own story and kind of go the way that we're hearing from Pequan, where you just say, hey, I'm going to own it. I'm going to kickstart it. I'm going to believe in myself because those places will reject me. Did you try to go to the traditional route?
Yeah, don't blind query an editor. They don't want it. They won't open it.
Yeah, yeah. Did you try at all, Tony and Dennis, to go to at any point the traditional...
I mean, Dennis eventually got there.
Into the mic, please, sir. Into the mic, please,
sir. Speaking of the mic, Tony, come on.
Oh, come please,
on.
Sir. Please, sir.
I mean, Dennis writes for DC right now.
But did it come from blind query, or did it come from your work?
No, it comes from working your way, from like building your career, right?
You
like
keep you going, you keep talking.
I know your story, Dennis. Tell him what's happening. To answer your question, I did not.
Did you send in art samples?
I never sent in samples.
Never got any rejection letters.
I've never been rejected.
I sent in samples one time, art samples to Dark Horse, and I got a letter very early. It was basically saying, in a nice way, this is awful and you need to work on everything. But I think that is a good thing. I think that if you are making comics and you're trying to start out, you have to make peace with the idea that you suck. And like, it's just going to be bad. That's just the way things go. And the only way, there's the Adventure Time quote, the only way you get better at something is sucking at something. And so you absolutely just have to make peace with that idea that you're probably going to make some bad comics. And then that's going to teach you how to make better comics. And it's a process that you just go through. And I think that it's a good idea to give those things. Like, I would make those mini comics that I was talking about. I kept sending them in. I sent a few into Oni Press until one day Oni Press called me and said, hey, we've got a book for you. We want you to try out on. Which meant I had to do some samples for free, and I did not get the job, and I was very annoyed by it. But then, I did it, and then another time I got a call. It's like, hey, we got it. We got a book for you. We don't need you to do samples. We just want you to do this. And it's only from being online, putting my art online, basically sucking out loud, like putting myself out there, which there's a lot of different ways to do that. And then, people look at your stuff and they see you getting better over time. You guys have all experienced that on the internet. You know somebody who at some point, you're like, hey, this guy's pretty good all of a sudden, like out of nowhere. And editors do that too, and people that give you money and hire you, they do that too, and they see it. And it's the only way to move forward. Like, I don't think, you just have to make peace. You're going to get rejected.
But a lot of people won't build that pain tolerance. Like, I think about that pain tolerance, and I'm like, oh, that's brutal. But you almost really have to throw yourself into the blender as fast as you can. Like, Jason, Ashley, when you guys came out, you weren't doing the things for, like, Image, maybe IDW, like Tony was, alongside your creator-owned work, where you could say, okay, cool, like, this one's for me. It's kind of my voice. And then here's the stuff that is actually sponsored by IDW and is a known license thing. And I think when I was writing Miami Vice for Lion Forge, I totally should have had my own creator-owned book so that I could completely fail, like Dennis is saying, and then alongside be like, yeah, but I'm also doing the Miami Vice book for Universal. And that I wasn't doing those two things concurrently, a lot of that had to do with the pain tolerance I didn't have for the rejection I was going to get for my own idea. And it really was through building community that I was like, okay, well, maybe I'll have enough support now to go through with it. But guys, I'm about to be 45 next week. It took me a long time to build the pain tolerance of going into indie comics through Kickstarter. How did you guys build pain tolerance?
There's a Peter Dinklage quote where he was given, I think when he won one of the Emmys or some SAG award, and he said, a lot of times when they'll see me on Game of Thrones, people will say, oh, lucky you. And his response to that is, you mean 10 years of hell to get the lucky you? He was like, it was not luck at all. It was 15 to 10 years of hard work until I got to this point. I just, weirdly for me, I just started looking at people and seeing other comic books and just being like, well, if they could do it, I could do it. Like, that's where I got to the point where, or I would, I got into a lot of like, YouTube journalism and stuff like that. Like, I was reviewing comic books, and I even, like, for 4 years, I was the co-host of DCL Access, so it was me and Tiffany Smith were like the face that you would see in DC comic books, and I interviewed enough creators, and they would talk about their process, and they would talk about their things, and I would say, like, well, if they can do it, I can do it. Like, they basically like laid out a blueprint for me. This can't be that hard. And you have to be very used to that first one, you know. And I did, you know, I sent samples to even before I was inside the building at DC, I sent samples. And you know, never heard anything back. And that's where I got like a lot of my pain tolerance. Like, my last Kickstarter comic book, Super Best Friend, was when I was in the building. I was literally in the building at DC Comics. I was a DC Comics employee, like making videos for them. And I pitched them the idea of like, hey, have you guys ever thought about Jimmy Olsen being a YouTuber? It's a pretty good idea. Like, he would make YouTube videos of Superman. And it would be like the most popular YouTube channel of all time. And their response, like literally their response to me was like, you're a video host.
Stay in your lane.
Basically, yeah. And so I just stripped off all the names. I got enough rejection of that. And I was like, you know what? This is a good idea. I don't care. And I made it Super Best Friend and made $60,000 on YouTube. Or not on YouTube, but on Kickstarter. So, but that goes in the
would
lane.
Would you say there was a little bit of spite there too? Because they told you no. Spite is an incredible motivator.
Yeah.
Spite's the best.
Because I knew it was a good idea.
Yep.
I knew it was a good idea. And you know, that was to go part of your thing, Jonathan. It's like the rejection train of just like, I had a lot of other people ask me, they were just like, yeah, but is the story less because it's not a Superman story? And my response to that is I'm like, no, the story is better.
Yes.
Because it's now mine.
Yes.
You know? And I think that also comes from that thick skin of rejection, too.
I just want to, like, add to the thing about rejection. Like, I'm an actor, so I've been rejected a million times worse from acting than I ever have from comics. And I'm also a woman on the internet, so, like, more people have told me to kill myself because I didn't like a Deadpool movie than they have over, like, anything I've ever created. So, and I think I'm great, so it doesn't really matter. Like, with Kickstarter is equitable. You'll either back it or you won't.
Yeah.
And the project either lives or it dies. And it's not, like, a hateful thing. So,
to me, it was really liberating to go to a place where you're not filtered by people who are trying to be the arbiters of taste. You actually get to really be yourself and be excited about the things that you really care about and just go for it. You know, so that was really liberating. And of course, my journey started with a very clear idea that I wanted to run my own studio. I was not trying to get a way in. I wanted to own my own voice. I wanted to live and die by the decisions and divisions that I had. So going to Kickstarter and so I was able to green light my own comic book, which was amazing. And I don't think I could have gotten a job being a writer. I'm not really trained as a writer, but I was able to write something that I'm really proud of, Chronicles of the Immortal Swordsman. I was able to essentially just get on the job and write something that I'm still proud of today.
But wait a minute, Paywan. He's not being honest with you. Writing is in his blood.
It is.
Especially in this subject matter, because your father was a big wushu writer.
Wuxia.
No,
my father was one of the top creators in the genre, I'd say, in the past 100 years. So a lot of that Chinese invasion stuff, I mean, so I saw him write my entire life, so it wasn't something.
But
so
not
it,
comics.
No, he wrote novels, and he wrote movies and television shows. So that's what, in fact, I was able to bring in all of that IP into our Storyverse, which we're in the process of updating. But that's a separate thing. But
yeah.
So yes, creativity is in my blood. So, and of course, coming from Hollywood, I wanted, you know, being able to be part of this medium where there's no limit, smaller limitations was really refreshing. So that was a different vantage point, maybe, because I didn't start off saying I wanted to be a comic book writer or not, but now it's in my blood and I love it, and I'll continue down this journey in addition to the other media. And
you had the same doubts of learning that new skill and in figuring out how to do it.
Tony, the hardest skill, frankly, was talking on video.
With me?
No, not with just in general.
Yeah.
Just because the prospect of going to a Kickstarter used to be when you're a movie producer, you're good in the room, right? You're pitching money people, you're pitching executives. Now you're like looking at the camera, you're talking to fans. So that was really hard.
Oh, you did
great. It took a little bit of time.
Okay. So that wasn't the first take you put up?
I'm still working on it.
Tony, what was the learning curve like for you?
you know, obviously you did a biographical book. It was something that you had to get out as an artist. But then as you start to get attention from places like IDW, you start to get attention from places that want to hire you, or you're pitching something like Local Man or Stray Dogs to Image. What were some of the skills that then took you from an autobiographical creator or somebody who's doing your art to someone who has to start thinking about commerce when you're doing a creator-owned book, but under the maybe a bigger corporate umbrella, like a place like Dark Horse or Image?
I want to add something to that, because I would love to know the answer, Tony. Were you ever rejected as like an, like, because you're, you know, the writer and artist.
Yeah.
Like, did a place ever reject you as the artist but accept you as the writer? Or reject you as the writer and accept you as the artist?
He's like, hey, listen, Larson's going to draw this.
Yeah. We got Tom McFarlane over here.
Sold. So. Yeah, I'm in. That sounds great. No, I mean, I've definitely had stuff, like pitches turned down. But they were never like, we want this, but not for you to draw.
Okay.
Or so far.
That is rejection, Tony. Like, when you turn down the pitch.
But not to me, buddy.
So you're saying there's a chance. Tony's like Jim Carrey. You're saying there's a chance.
I'm very stubborn. Like, if a pitch gets rejected, it just goes back in my pocket and it'll go somewhere else eventually. Like, once I've decided I'm making something, I'm making it.
But that's
somewhere.
That's so true, though. Like, a lot of this stuff that I'm putting together now is screenplays that just are like, you know, that's, it's like what Jason said. It's like, oh, DC doesn't want my Jimmy Olsen story that is a slam dunk. I'm going to do it myself. And like, if we look at a budget, like Paywan is telling you, like, if we can't do a fantasy world in a bunch of special effects on a budget, then we got to figure out how to do it on the page.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think that's the tactic. Continue, sir, please.
No, to answer your question, and same as Dennis, like when I made my own comic, originally it was like, let me teach myself how to do these things. Like,
sure.
I was on the internet in message board culture at the time, and there was a lot of comics being made, and I was like, like you said, like if they could do it, I could do it too. But also, it was like, well, I had never written anything at that point, and it was like, well, I don't want to, like, this takes a long time to draw it, and I don't want to spend that time just drawing somebody else's dumb story, so I'll just do my own dumb stories. And then that's how that happened. But all the learning curve part of it, I definitely think about commerce, but I don't, not when I'm coming up with story ideas necessarily. So that's not a part of it. The main thing, because like I drew for My Little Pony for like 10 years, the IDW comics, and I drew Star Wars comics for them and Rick and Morty comics for Oni and a lot of licensed stuff. And all that stuff was, like Dennis was saying, like it was like my doing, like failing out loud. Like, you know, I have to draw this book in 3 weeks. It has to be good enough to be printed. And so let me just do as best as I can for, you know, hundreds and hundreds and thousands of pages until when I'm, like, I sort of spent that long stretch figuring it out, learning how to tell stories, feeling good about it, being confident. And then when I remembered, like, oh, I should also be making my own stuff. Like, there's no retirement set up for me at My Little Pony Comics HQ, you know, so I should own my own stuff. And so by the time I came back around to doing that and I did books like Stray Dogs, I was a much more confident storyteller and much stronger storyteller at that point to be able to take everything I'd, you know, built, learned during drawing licensed comics for all that time and sort of and put it into my own stuff.
You build community too.
What was that, Dennis?
Studio together.
You build community as well?
Community.
Yeah, yeah.
You suddenly have pros around you that are also doing the thing that you respect and in pushing each other. Like Tony and I were in a studio together and we were making comics and I was in his ear constantly saying, make indie comics, you fool.
Yeah.
Like, what are you doing all these My Little Pony? Like sometimes it's tough love, but you know, and then Tony would sometimes, what are you doing? Get to work. Like, kind of like, you know, it's just that back and forth. And I think that's important too.
I built that community, like the kind of community that kicks your ass and makes you better. And then I also built the community of collaborators, of, I've worked with this guy on one thing, he could color this book, or I met Trish who drew Stray Dogs through drawing My Little Pony comics.
And community, going to conventions, yeah, and meeting, yeah, you know, retailers, like, and customers, yeah, and all that stuff. Yeah.
And I would say that is something that you guys listen, watching this panel can do right now, is walk the floor, talk to the artists. I mean, I talked to my lawyer about how to figure this thing, whole thing out with indie comics, and he pointed me to just Facebook groups for writers that want to connect with artists, and artists and writers that want to connect with publishers. And I started a Google Sheets where I said, okay, like, the artist's name, link to their art page or their portfolio, or your DeviantArt, and what their rate is. And it, does that include pencils? Does it include inks? Or it, of course it includes pencil. Does it include inks? Does it include scanning? And I made a database, and I just looked at it and said, okay, if I have a 24-page comic, how much does this person cost versus this person? And what is their style? And I kind of just budgeted the whole thing out. But as I'm doing it, I'm communicating with artists on Facebook or email, and just talking to them about, oh, this is what you're about. Where do you live? Oh, cool. What are you into? I see that you drew this, and I love that style. I don't have an idea for it yet, but I'm going to put you in my back pocket for an idea later on. And Jason, in the last 2 weeks, 3 weeks, I've added like 45 artists on this spreadsheet that I want to work with all of them, because I reached out to them. And if any idea comes to me and it can't immediately turn into a film or TV show, it's going right to that database because it's affordable and immediate. And that, and we've been taught, we talk even not about comics. Some of these artists, I'm like,
that's the
we're
best
talking
thing.
About Godzilla Minus Zero.
That's the best thing about indie comics. And I think everybody on this table would agree, is that the pool of artists that are only working at Marvel and DC is such a small pool, and the pool of artists that are everywhere else, like, you would be surprised. I found every artist that I've ever collaborated with on Twitter, because I will just, if I see your artwork and I like you, I will follow you. And I have a list that I do as well. And, you know, there are people out there that I'm shocked. Like, there are people out there that I generally do think should draw Batman. And, you know, DC has no idea who they are.
I reached out to one and I said, hey man, I like your book. But I didn't realize his post was from 2022. He's a Daredevil artist right now. He's, yeah, the current Daredevil artist.
Jason and I found
and I was
our,
like,
our...
Oh shit, this guy deserved to be with the big two, more so than a lot of artists, and he did.
Jason and I found our first ever artist for Ringo Losing series, Jupiter Jet. thank you so much. Because his name is Ben Matsuya, because he drew fan art of Jason, and it was pretty good. And we were like, do you have sequential samples? And one of our earliest collaborators for an anthology, Nick Robles, is now drawing a bunch of stuff at DC.
Yeah, those guys are great.
Yeah.
And they're all out there, and they, just like you as a writer, just like you as a creator, they are looking to get their shot. And like Tony said about building community, like Dennis said, why not give each other that shot and build that community and build that product together and get excited about ideas together, right? Because that's kind of the way these studios form, you know?
As an artist, though, I am terrified at the idea of being on a spreadsheet with 45 other people in a week. What are you going to do with that many artists?
Okay.
Listen, all right. He hasn't rejected you yet.
I got lots of stories. I got lots of stories.
I think you're already on that list.
Yeah,
fortunately,
that's probably true.
So without
you just don't know it.
But on the other side of that, I will say that the great thing about, you know, all kinds of social media and artists having websites, and the great thing about indie comics is that, like, I, a lot of times, you know, some of the big dogs that I think would never draw an indie comic, like I mentioned Dan Juergens, and like, I will email people that I admire in comic books, and I will just say, I'm doing this book on Kickstarter, I need a cover, what's your price? Just an ask. And you would be surprised who will respond and who will give you quotes and who will you, people that you would be like, oh, there's no way in hell I can afford this person, who will give you a reasonable rate that'll be like, oh, I can totally pay that. Well, then I guess you are gonna do a variant cover for me, Dan Juergens, you know. you'll be surprised, the pros. So like, and then again, that's the thing, that like, if you were working at one of the big two, I think like, you could see an editor or editor-in-chief being like, no, that person's completely wrong for your book.
Sure.
But for you, you could have fun with it.
It's your art.
Yeah.
You find out who's right for it.
Well, and there's also something cool, because we do that with Local Man, too, is we hire a lot of people who drew Image Comics in the 90s. And most of them are still working in comics, but they could do a cover for, like, you know, New Warriors or something, and it would just come out in previews and come out in stores. But when they do a local man cover, we spend, you know, the whole 3 months before it comes out going, like, Brett Booth did a cover for this. You're not going to believe how dope it looks, you know, like, and their mentions pop off, and they, you know, it's got to feel nice all day long just being like, oh, yeah. They really think this is great, you know? Whereas, you know, otherwise it's just you're sort of doing your job, you know? You just turn in your work and it comes out, and, you know, in indie comics you do sort of get to celebrate by way of having to scream at the top of your lungs that your books are coming out all the time.
So I think this is, for those of you who are actually considering going on Kickstarter, I think there's been a lot of discussions about the creative, the art, the networking. I would say spend as much time as an equal amount of time to really thinking about marketing. So if you're thinking about doing something, the time to put together your email list is now. You have time to really get comfortable standing in front of a camera, putting your lists together, thinking about the marketing copy, all of those things. Because I think part of Kickstarter is that you're really inviting people to come on this journey with you. And you just want to have as big of a community out the door. Because I think that's really the other critical success factor. So if you just spend some time thinking about what that looks like. And acquiring names, putting that email list together, think about marketing, think about the things that really makes what you're doing very, very special. When that's married properly together with the artwork is really kind of when the magic happens. So I would say think about those things as well.
Yeah, you're about to become frighteningly aware if you have an arts degree instead of a business degree.
Well, Paywan, you threw it to the aspiring possible creators. What questions do you have for the panelists, if you guys have any? We have about 10, 15 minutes left. What? Yes, sir, in the back. I'll repeat your question so that we can have it on mic. Would you recommend, if you're not an artist at the moment, would you recommend learning how to draw or getting an illustrator if you come from a strict writing background is the question?
Depends on the kind of story that you're trying to tell, right? You got some?
Yeah, I would do the thing I was talking about earlier where you make a daily comic that's 3 or 4 panels, even if you're drawing it with stick figures. You're going to just taking an idea, like somebody said a funny thing to you at the supermarket, and breaking that down into only 4 panels and figuring out how to communicate what was said, the punchline, whatever it is. Like, even with stick figures, it's going to teach you so much about not only what the process of making comics, but being able to take what your idea is and communicating it to an artist who has a visual mindset. And if you do that, like, commit yourself to doing it for like 30 days. Just whatever little small thing you can do, you're going to learn so much. Letter it yourself, do the whole thing. You want to color it, but like teach yourself like just the very fundamental mechanics of comics. It'll go miles and miles of like talking with artists and suddenly being able to write for artists, because as artists who have drawn for writers who are not prepared for that, it is a nightmare when somebody doesn't understand that you can only get one action in a panel. You can't do several things at once in a panel. Like, you like learning that process is going to help you a lot. That's my POV.
The question is, if you've kind of worked on this long enough to develop several stories within a comic book universe, and your question is, do you start with one shot for one of the titles, or 3 mini stories for 3 of the titles, and maybe put them in a horse race against each other to see which one has the most legs, and then continue with that? Or what do you guys think of a strategy like that? Because, you know, he and I don't have that much different. Like, if I come into this stage of wanting to put things into comics, and I've got several screenplays sitting on the laptop, and I'm like, okay, which one do we start with first? Or I could do a double issue where it has 2 stories in one, and then we see which one people respond to. Like, I mean, is there an answer to this? Is there a science to this? What do you guys think?
There's not an answer. The answer is you've got to get over your insecurities, make a decision. And that's a non-answer, I understand. Jeremy Adams has a great quote that the new perfect is finished.
Yep.
And I think Grace Ellis also has a great quote that is professionals finish things. And those are something that I cling to every single day. I would say take the story you feel strongest about. And if it's closer to 3 pages, do 3. And if it's closer to 24, do 24. But like, stick with your best idea and the thing you're most excited for, because that's going to help you finish.
Yeah, done is beautiful.
Yep.
Yeah, you probably have an instinct in your gut, like you know which one is the best one.
Just You know.
I tried this quite a bit, which is going and testing. I love testing things out, and I would oftentimes put up just a bunch of things on Facebook, just pictures, and you could try this on your own. And you know, the one that you're most passionate about isn't oftentimes the one that people actually want to see. I would test it out to the degree that you're going to be relying upon some kind of customer reaction. I would engage your community and have them be part of this selection process.
Counterpoint.
That's a great idea, and I see you doing it with the four. Like right now, Immortal Studios has four books plus.
Kickstarter with four books.
And you can kind of see like what people are responding to and which one you might want to put a little bit more resources towards, a little more attention towards. Not that you don't want to tell all of them, because I know you want to tell all of them, right? They all burn inside of you, but there's a strategy to making the name by doing the one that people really want. I think that's great advice, Pehuan.
And I actually think that, because I love the comic medium, but I'm not wedded to how it's going to manifest in the future. I personally think, like, nobody heard of Webtoons before. They're just kind of, they arrived and kind of changed the game. And I personally believe that the business of comics are on the verge of changing, because it hasn't really caught up to digital realities, particularly for Gen Y, Gen Z, where it's no longer, you know, driven by comic books, but it's driven by digital scrolling and social media. So I think the means of distribution are about to change, and I would say, you know, be part of that before it even happens. I personally would like to launch things on TikTok right now, which is the next generation for what we're doing at Immortal. Where this becomes a companion to other things that we want to do in real time, rendering and delivery.
There's an app called Tapas. It's mainly anime, manga, and they will do an ad split with creators, but it is very heavily manga, comics, and they do a scroll. It is a vertical or a left scroll, and every couple of pages, you get a little bit of an ad. You can post your stuff up on there for free, compete in their community of creators, see who gets the clicks. But if a book does well enough, Tapas will then take it and they'll print it in China and start printing it in other places. One of the ex-editor-in-chiefs of heads of Tapas was somebody who listened to an early podcast of me enthusiastically, this is how old it was, talking about the line art from the very first Civil War in Marvel that they did. It was like, and I was talking about the line art and I was like, oh my God, it's so incredible. He went out and bought comics for the first time and got so into comics that he pursued a career in comics. My friend Michael worked at Tapas for a long time, and that's an app. And that is something that will probably take your work now. You won't make any money on it until you start putting together followers, but in the same way you would do it on an Instagram or on a Twitter or on your Facebook or any of these social media. So I think that's a great note.
I would do that first.
Do it.
I would do that first.
Tapas, like you're going to a Spanish restaurant. TAPAS. And again, it's very anime, manga. It's very heavy on manga influence stuff and manga content.
Webtoons has a similar platform,
right. One more question. Let's do one more question. And then, of course, I'm going to throw you guys at my panelists out in the hallway. You can attack them like piranhas. Yes, sir, in the back. Oh, with the snap. Yes, sir. The question is, we're as creators, like, what stories are we drawn to tell that aren't being told? And I haven't said this so far on the panel, but one thing that beyond just building a Geekscape community of you guys, like I just had Pehuan on the show. I've been doing this weekly podcast for 18 years to meet creators, talk to creators, pull knowledge from creators. One thing that inspires me beyond like talking to you guys and building a community with you guys is kind of reading the Big Two. When I read the Big Two, I've started to just read the Big Two and say, oh, Jonathan, you can do this. Like, no offense to the Big Two, but like, it's like some of the, I'm not talking like the big writing on the big stuff, but like some of the books I read are just like, all right, Jonathan, like you can write this stuff.
No,
like,
what you're talking about, does that make sense, Tony?
What
you're talking about,
I don't mean to like be a hater, but like,
it's not being a hater.
You do the same with movies. You watch, it's the same thing that inspires you to be a filmmaker too. It's like, oh,
I can do this.
But that ego is like apparent with all creators.
Right.
We all have this kind of hubris.
Oh, go for it.
That we look at something and we think we can do it better. Like that is, there's like, you know, that fear you were talking about at the beginning, the fear of rejection. We have that, but we also have this kind of thing. I could do that better too. And it's like this weird contrast.
So you just go do it, right?
Yeah, you just make the thing. That is really the answer to this.
And you have to be naive too, right?
Make a comic, the end. Like so you get better with every comic.
But to answer your question, I'm a one genre guy. I'm beyond. I love to sample other things, but I only do things that are martial arts fantasy oriented.
And I'm not
full stop.
Superheroes. Like,
I just don't do anything that's out of that lane. I may do it as an experiment, but my focus is entirely into that genre.
And to answer that, like what I'm really saying with like Marvel and DC is like I read the superhero stuff and I'm like, I think I'm growing out of this and I need to write stories in a different direction.
This campaign cover,
right.
Turning the page on superheroes.
You're turning the page on superheroes and doing wuxia stuff. I think I'm just going to go violently away from, I don't think I'll ever write a superhero story. And that is like what Jason and Ashley know very well. Like,
we've outgrown superheroes.
Like Jason and Ashley love, like Jason is very versed in superheroes.
I'm here for
like
superheroes.
Well, our editor-in-chief was the editor-in-chief of Marvel and DC. So it's not like I'm disrespecting them. It's just that I think every generation requires stories that are fitting for that time frame, and I think we've moved on, we're in the process of moving on.
But Tony's celebrating it with Local Man and then commenting on it.
Yeah, I guess to a certain extent. That's about indie comics, too.
Yeah.
It's not about Big Two Comics. But what you're saying about I think I could do that better is ties in
wrong. I think I said it wrong. I think I can do. There has to be a different way to do this.
That's exactly it. And what you're asking about with genre and stuff like that is those two things are related. Like when I see, you know, like a Western and there's some like it, and it's going in a direction and I go, oh, this is going to be awesome when this happens. And then that thing I think that's going to happen doesn't happen. All of a sudden, then I have an idea for a Western. It's like, oh, do that thing, but then that thing happens. There's a movie out right now, Saltburn, that I feel like the filmmaker was just like, they saw talent from Mr. Ripley and be like, what if this happened though? Mm-hmm. And then they just made a, you know, they just went ahead and made their own thing. There's all kinds of ideas that come from watching something, reading something, seeing I've seen two trailers in a row and go like, those should be the same movie.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like I want to see it if, you know, the guy tries to get the girl that's out of his league, but then also, you know, she's a inhuman monster that eats people or whatever, you know, like
green light.
Spoilers for Local Man. No, I'm kidding.
See, yeah, I agree with Tony here because, like, I always just go on like where my mood takes me, and it's funny. Jonathan just, you know, put me down as like superhero machismo guy, or whatever. And,
No. You're just very versed in it.
So I'm very versed in it, but I feel the same way about Jonathan, and it's so funny that we have two people on our panel that are very much about, you know, like sort of autobiographical comic books, because I would be honest with you, I kind of think because of webtoons and things like that, that's where we're going to go back to. Because for me, I looked this up right now. If you haven't read Ducks by Kate Beaton, it's one of the best comic books I've read in 10 years. And it is simply a story about a girl working in an oil field. And I thought it was brilliant.
And it's been like 20 years-ish since the autobio, like the last sort of like autobio spike. These things are 10
years. Yeah. Brian Bucatello, how do you pronounce Brian's name? Brian Bucatello? Bucatello. He's doing a semi-autobiographical book called Midlife Hero or whatever. I think it's, I saw the pages in the back of your book. I think it's the first time I read it. And did they put an image, I think, put pages from it in the back of it?
Probably an ad. I don't think.
Yeah, an ad. I looked at it and I was like, oh my God, this is awesome. I went and talked to him yesterday on the floor. It was like, I gotta read this book. It looked great, and he's a super cool guy. But I do think that autobiographical stuff's coming back.
I do too. Yeah, that would be my guess.
Isn't that the best work, anyways? When you're writing from your heart,
right?
However you obscure it, ultimately it comes. The things that really land are the things that touch us.
Mm-hmm.
By the way, Brian Bucciolato is my co-writer on one of our books that's on Kickstarter right now.
It's all connected.
Yes.
It's all connected.
It all back around.
This is all connected. Geekscape is the new MCU. It's all connected.
There you go.
Geekscape is. Do you remember when they had they launched like Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and you had like Jeff Loeb saying it's all connected?
Dude, I'm onto you.
No,
you
we're all Geekscape is all, me just trying to connect you guys.
You're doing something in any court of law.
I'm trying. Well, guys, listen. There's so much more to talk about. Thank you guys for being part of this panel. I want to thank my panelists first, like Ashley, Jason, Tony, Dennis, Pei-Juan. Like, thank you guys so much for the knowledge. I did record this so it could be out on the Geekscape podcast feed. Subscribe to Geekscape on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, however you do it. And also subscribe to Ashley and Jason's podcast, which they're going to plug right now. And thank you guys for being a part of this. Hey, wasn't that fun talking about my first love, comic books? I love talking comic books, and I really love talking comic books in front of an audience, and I really love talking comic books with you all. The Geekscapists, my chosen family. Maybe you've pried yourself away from your real family during the holidays to listen to this Geekscape. Hey, it's okay. Everybody needs a little bit of me time, and you made it us time. Geekscape time. And I appreciate that you did that. It means a lot to me. But this is free content, and I'm going to ask for you to pay the price of hitting that share button, sending this to your friends, and saying, hey, you like comics? This might be a really cool conversation for you to listen to. You might really enjoy it. Also, you can leave us that 5-star review on whatever podcatcher you're listening to my voice on right now, because that stuff helps me get more awesome guests on the podcast. And of course, subscribe, do all that stuff, and look for Geekscape on all of the different social media outlets. You can always email me at jonathan@geekscape.net. I should answer your email pretty quickly. And we'll see you in 2024. Geekscape forever. Don't hate, create. Peace.
You're listening to the Geekscape Network.